Welcome, Sega fans, to the Sega Guys podcast, the podcast that is filled with untapped potential. I'm Dan the Mega Driver, and with me is my co-host, the Tommy Fossetti to my Doom Guy. It's James the Segaholic. Mate, how you doing?
Look, Sonny, I'll get your money. It's my money, Tommy!
Oh, very good, mate. Very good. How's yourself?
Yeah, good, mate. You know, if Tommy Vercetti had the Doom Guy with him, then he could have taken over Vice City a lot quicker, couldn't he?
Right, well, that's true, eh? a nice hint at what we're going to talk about today. It's certainly been a hell of a week for the Dreamcast.
A hell of a week for gaming in general. I know we like to timestamp these, but Nintendo Switch announcements today, Switch 2. Yeah. £75 games, mate. Not $90 in the US. I don't think the unit, 400 quid, was that bad, but Jesus. 90 quid for a copy of Mario Kart. Mario Kart. Fucking Mario Kart.
If you adjust it for inflation, it's actually not that different.
It makes me laugh. It's like... these people put in pictures of like Toys R Us catalog saying, but don't you see, games are much more cheaper now than you can pay like 90 quid for a SNES game and $70 for an N64 game. It's like, yeah, it's still Nintendo being shit. you know, Saturn and PlayStation games were less than £45. It was only Nintendo that was doing that. So, oh mate, so it's a, you know, I looked at it, it's just like hard pass for me. Just like state of gaming when it's 75 quid for a copy of Mario Kart. I know you get one bundle.
And then like the one thing that was the most appealing about the Switch, you know, the fact that, you know, whenever I set up my wee girls at Christmas, it was slap a cartridge in and go. Old school gaming, instantaneous. And now they've got these game card things that not every game will use them apparently, but like it's on an ad hoc kind of game by game basis where the cards will initiate a digital download and it has to be in the machine for the download to work, apparently. And I'm like, what is it with these companies? They win a generation and then they move to the next one and then they just fuck it up. Yeah. It's like, they just decide, see everything that works. Like, it looked, for all intents and purposes, whenever we've seen the leaks and then the kind of official like announcement a couple of weeks ago where they announced it was real, and you look at it, you go, hey, okay, it's a Switch. You've made it bigger. Hall sensors on the sticks. Stick drift is gone. Looks good. Okay, you're just repeating what's come before. What can go wrong?
Well, wait there, Bob.
Like, okay, what's happened? Nah, the game card thing, I'm like, you just know it's going to be first party games that are going to be riddled with those, don't you? It's like... Ah, oh, just why do they have to go and screw things up, man? Just repeat what you did before and make it more powerful. Like, the people will flock to it. You've got a successful business model there. It's just greed. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just...
It is.
It's mad. It's... mate, honestly, no wonder we do this.
Exactly. You know, if no wonder we revert back to the true gaming champions, and that is Sega. You know, they didn't win the console wars, mate. They won our hearts. And they still do today.
In there, to this day.
Because the soul still burns.
Yes, indeed. I mean, yes, it's been a busy week for the channel. Obviously, we had 3 videos in 3 days. And driven by pretty much today's topic, and that is, you know, the homebrew scene on the Dreamcast and how it's evolved. And I think it's something that we've talked about before, mate, is the untapped potential of the Sega Dreamcast. And, you know... There's a few interesting things that I think we'll touch on, but it feels like the console is finally coming of age in the homebrew community. And for a system that whose life was so short lived, it's finally seeing what it was truly capable of.
Aye, and it's like it's seen these games that we were told couldn't be done. You know, that in the case of Grand Theft Auto 3, you know, and obviously Vice City. It was like we were told that these games were too big and, you know, the DVD was required for the streaming of these massive cities and the radio stations with real music and all these visual effects like fog and bloom and real-time reflections and, oh, it couldn't be done and all that on Dreamcast. And then, well, well look, they've only gone and done it, you know. Yeah. So coming of age is the right word, mate. I mean, I think it's something we spoke about on here quite often, you know, is that we looked at the indie scene, and as great as it was to see brand new Dreamcast games coming out, you know, it was great to see people trying to keep the system relevant and alive by bringing out brand new sealed retail case style indie games. But, you know, they never quite hit the spot. You know, development tools weren't quite there. And the end results were always the words I used, and controversially so. And I think it was the Radio Sega Discord at the time, I think I said it, was that they were an insult to the Dreamcast. And I stand by that. You know, I get that this is people have put a lot of hard work into it, but stuff like Intrepid Izzy and Super Alice Sisters and things like that are just not what the Dreamcast was about. Cast your mind back to when Dreamcast was announced. This was every single article was Model 3 is coming home. It was power. And that aspect gets lost today because of the years that have passed, the technology that's come since. But this machine was an absolute beast when it came out. Like, the jump from PS1 and Saturn to Dreamcast was absolutely insane. Like, jaggies were gone, pixels were gone, textures were so detailed that the picture you were getting was such a higher resolution than what you were used to. Like, you go from Metal Gear Solid on PS1 to Shenmue, you know, or even Soul Calibur on Dreamcast. You go from Solid Snake having two dots and a couple of squiggly lines for a face to actual expressions. You know, it was a monumental leap, and that was forgotten, I think, that this machine, while it is beloved in the indie scene, I think you've got to remember what it was when it came out. It was an absolute powerhouse. And thankfully now, because of the advancements we're seeing, especially in Callisto OS, you know, the work that's been done to bring that up to speed by likes of Falco Gurgis, you know, now we're seeing the fruits of that labour. And it's insane, mate. And this is just the beginning. Where are they going to go with this stuff? That's the exciting thing.
Yeah, I completely agree, mate. It's extremely exciting where it could go. I think it is interesting to go back and kind of trace back the steps of Dreamcast homebrew. I think sometimes it's kind of a fine line between where you say what's homebrew and what's indie, because obviously when Dreamcast, as you say, when it landed, it was superior to Model 3. It was the source of the most powerful arcade hardware on the planet at the time, only surpassed later on by the PS2. And it was such a monumental console release that, you know, the games were just so far beyond, like you were saying, mate, they were so far beyond what was the benchmark for the time. You look at the N64 that came out, 2 years before in the West, you know, Mario 64, you compare Sonic to Mario 64, you know, it's night and day. You didn't have any, for all its issues, you didn't have anything like Sega Rally 2 on any other system, that level of detail, of clarity, you know. So it really was this powerhouse console when it first released. And I think a bit of that is lost because it very quickly became a bit of a homebrew darling. You know, very early on, I remember playing homebrew games on Dreamcast. Maybe not necessarily purely games, but we started getting stuff like the Beats of Rage, like games. We started getting, you know, emulators on there. So you'd get. I remember having SNES and Mega Drive emulators. They didn't run brilliantly, but it was pretty cool. And people were already, you know, even in those early days, they were thinking about. We did kind of have a burgeoning homebrew scene to a degree. Indie scene, I should say, because you had titles like Last Hope that were released unofficially on the platform. And I think that's one of the very first ones. But even then, you look back at that original homebrew stuff, and it was very much still. I don't want to say basic, because you know we both know that this is well beyond anything that we could do. You know, incredibly talented people have been behind this, but it feels like. I think even back then, you know, you look at the emulators and the performance and stuff, and you look at the kind of Sega Smash Pack from Sega wasn't perfect, but then those games performed a little bit better. And you can think, you know, it felt like certain secret sauce was still locked away from those homebrew devs, didn't it? And I think it's now we're kind of rediscovering it a little bit. Or I say we, you know, people like Falco and J.M. Martins are discovering it and making incredible things as a result.
Aye, and again, it's, as I said, it's all down to the tools, mate. You know, it's like not everybody who was trying to make games for this had access to those giant, you know, with the big PC tower style Dreamcast dev kits. You know, one of which I'm still maintaining until my last breath is locked away somewhere with a build of VF4 on it. But you know, hopefully someone finds it. I'm still convinced it was getting ported to Dreamcast and cancelled and locked away. But aye, it's. The homebrew scene stuff, I mean, I never really, in terms of whenever Dreamcast was like, in its kind of dying days and the kind of years after it, I wasn't aware of any kind of homebrew stuff in that regard. It wasn't until kind of coming into the community and, you know, obviously hooking up with yourself and kind of starting the podcast and stuff that you become aware of what's out there. So the Beats of Rage stuff, which I think has been kind of done to death, is like every, you know, I don't know, TV show or cartoon has had some kind of like there's like a Simpsons version and there's a Turtles version.
There's a King of Fighters version.
Aye, the Turtles version looks quite good, right enough. That actually would pass for a legit Turtles arcade game. But
was that the one that very recently was almost the port of Shredder's Revenge?
Close to. Was that one of Ian Michaels' compilations? I think it had like SNES games and Game Boy games and all that on it as well. Was it the Cowabunga collection?
Yeah.
Aye. You know, and Ian does a lot with emulators. You know, we've seen that already with Shinobi and Golden Axe. I need to put his Golden Axe on my Dreamcast, actually. I've not put that over yet and played that. That's another thing as well that you see. It's like, again, we're talking about people saying, you know, that these games were, you know, they can't be done. But you also see people saying, like, why are they doing this? Or why would you want to play that? Like, Jason, he's on quite a few Dreamcast, like, kind of Facebook groups. I don't go near them, right? Just hell holes, man. See Facebook and stuff like that. No. But he put up screenshots on the WhatsApp chat, and it was people replying. He put the video up, the link up for the GTA video that I did yesterday. It was one guy replying, going, why would anyone want to play this? It won't have all the radio stations and it won't have all of the map. And I'm like, mate, you're commenting without even having played the fucking thing. You know, it's like, no, it does have all the map. And it turned out after speaking to Falco that the way that I was running the game, he told me the way to run it optimally. GTA 3 anyway, it says to make sure you enable BPP 24 or 24 BPP, keep the frame limiter on and turn on the times 2 anti-aliasing before you start the game, and I couldn't find the 24 BPP setting. Turns out to get that you set it to, it's on the resolution, it's 640 times 480 times 24, the default is times 16. So he says that that's basically, his words were, it's superior graphical fidelity for free. So the for free in his wording and context is without taxing the system any, you're mm-hmm. getting this no impact at all. He said that the times 2 anti-aliasing is almost always for free, except for scenes where there's heavy transparency, such as rain and fog, which can cause some dips, but they are still working to optimize that kind of stuff. So, I've not actually tried the 24 BPP setting yet. I need to go and try that and see what that's like as well, because he said that you do notice it. So I need to try that out at some point as well. But I just, people, again, they come up with these things and they go, why are they doing this? Why would anyone want to play these? And I'm like, you missed the point. It's like, for these guys, there's like a lot of kind of personal pride as well. You know, you take a look at like J.N. Martin, for example, like J.N. Martin does these projects unashamedly. He admits this publicly. Like, he doesn't suffer fools. Like, he will rip a project off the face of the internet. Like, if it gets leaked out or if something happens, like, he took the Wipeout. Bill Spiney was sharing them publicly. He took them down because someone on Dreamcast Talk had shared the link to a CDI. So he took them down and put new links up, like, you know, but these people are making these things out of passion in their own time, you know, and we should be thankful for that, not, you know, chastising them or, you know, getting comments and going, well, if it was me doing this, what I would add, see if you would add something, then go and do it. Don't go in comments going, well, actually, if it was me, but it's no you. You know what I mean? So shut up. It's like, but no, there's some proper killjoys out there when it comes to the homebrew stuff. You've got to remember that these guys are doing this out of passion. We're getting this stuff for free. You know what I mean? It's insane. So just have a bit of respect. Slight tangent in my kind of point there, but.
Well, funny, isn't it? Because you'll get someone who'll come in, click on the video, and then click on the comment and write out a comment going, I don't understand why someone would spend time doing this. And it's like, well, why did you decide to click on this video and type out this comment? I mean, that's so much.
Why? Why did you decide to just reply to a thumbnail and not even watch the video? That's the question.
You know, they've taken time and energy to write something negative about something that they don't consume or understand. And, you know, is that a worthwhile use of that individual's time? I don't know. But
it's engagement, mate. We don't care. It's engagement.
Yeah, where it is. You know, when it comes to YouTube, you know. If we're making you angry, comment below. but it's amazing how far we've come, mate. You do wonder what sort of applications it could have in the future. Because obviously when we talk about Intrepidity, stuff like Xenocrisis, Driving Strikers, they were kind of multi-format ports of existing games. So I think those three you can buy, or buy those on Steam, I think.
Shadow Gangs as well.
Shadow Gangs is another one, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're good games that you can buy. Obviously, this isn't going to apply to anything like Doom 64 or Grand Theft Auto or Wipeout, you know, those three. But, you know, conceivably, could this lead to maybe some, you know, fully polygonal games in that similar vein being retail games? You know, Wave do produce a number of, or they publish a number of these games. Be nice to see some sort of, you know, see this sort of effort that we're seeing in from, you know, the likes of Falco and everyone, realized in kind of a production case that's actually sold. And, you know, it'd be good for those guys to get something out of it. But yeah, I do wonder what the future could hold, because as I say, on the indie side, we have seen those games go out and, you know, get published and be sold. And wonder if, you know, could this be the start of some more advanced retail Dreamcast games in its kind of second lease of life?
I would like to think that it would, you know, the Callisto OS, it would perhaps open doors to more brand new original Dreamcast games that are closer to the retail games that we've seen before. Like, obviously, GTA 3 and Vice City are kind of recompiled PC versions, essentially. You know, so Doom 64, again, GN Martin's kind of reverse engineered the Nintendo 64 version. And in the case of Wipeout, you know, it was because of the source code that was leaked. So Wipeout Rewrite, as the project is called, that's been on, you know, there was an attempt to bring it onto Dreamcast in 2023. Mr. Neo 24 tried to do it. Kind of textures missing in audio, kind of tracks not there, but they tried to do it. Wipeout Rewrite's also been on the Amiga as well years ago, or recently, about a year ago. So it's done the rounds, but the reason why they were able to turn that around so fast is because they have the source code, you know. But it would be amazing to see. I mean, you think about Frogbull, right? So Frogbull's tried to get Metal Gear Solid 2, the tech demo, right, up and running. Now, to do the whole of Metal Gear Solid 2 would be one hell of an undertaking for one guy, but we now have a team, right? Don't put any pressure on them to do Metal Gear Solid 2, right? But the point I'm trying to make is that you look at how much Callisto OS has come on since he done that demo. So what, you know, nips and tucks and tweaks and performance gains are now available that could maybe make that even better, you know. So that's the exciting thing. I know we all kind of sit here and go with what games we'd love to see. We spoke about Outrun 2 or Daytona 2 or Scud Race or VF4 and things like that, and they're all like complete and utter pipe dreams. But who's to say people couldn't, you know, make real, you know, genuine, proper retail era Dreamcast games in 3D? You know, we looked at, what was the one? It was Arcade Racing Legends, right? Oh man, I seen stills of that and I was like, oh, okay, looks not too bad. You can see it was many, many steps below like a retail game. But you can see what it was trying to do. It was trying to bring in the kind of classic cars, Crazy Taxis, you know, it was Axel's Cab and the Hornet for Daytona and the Stratos and stuff like that. No Stratos, the Delta for Sega Rally. But whenever you seen it running, mate, it was really poor. Like, and the handling just wasn't there at all. The track design was really poor. It was just really bland looking. But now you're thinking, like, what could these guys do now? Like, if the people that made Arcade Racing Legends were clued up on this Callisto OS stuff, like, could they take that back in and ramp it right up another 3, 4, 5 levels to make it look closer to a retail game? I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and I think sometimes it's the challenge is that I think it was a single developer, wasn't it, who did Racing Legends, and you know, you've got to give them a bit of slack because they're effectively being coder, graphic designer, level designer, track designer, everything all in one. I think the double-edged sword about a lot of this is, you know, the simpler games that came to Dreamcast are, you know, they're indie games elsewhere as well, and they're simple for a reason, you know, because it's less work. And you think the thing that we take probably need to reflect for, you know, Grand Theft Auto Vice City is that was a hell of a project by effectively a pretty large team of volunteers. Effectively, you know, we had Falco and Skimp, also had Frogball contributing, and Frogball was excellent at kind of showcasing where they were basically, because as you say, they took the PC version, which, because that was the version that, you know, RE3, is it RE3, the decompilation of the Grand Theft Auto 3, it's got the Vice City branch, so it covers both games. So obviously it's PC assets originally, and then they had to be taken, and then they were kind of, I think they started converting them into PS2, and then they simplified some of the cars even more, took away some of the vertices, and you wouldn't even notice, you know. Frogball was saying, yeah, this is the PS2 version, this is the Dreamcast version with, you know, 600 less polygons, 30 less vertices or whatever, and you'd be like, well, they look pretty much identical. The point was there was it, they were like a team, and I suppose when you're talking about kind of developing a game that's going to be, you know, that advanced and that could sell for retail, I think that probably would require a team to do. But then I suppose if you are, does this open the door for more advanced ports now? So obviously we know that, like, the games like, you know, IEEE, Xenocrisis, Shadow Gangs, etc., again, they got released on other platforms as well. What about kind of the next stage up from that level of indie game, that level of kind of 3D game? Will we start seeing some games like that on the Dreamcast now?
Hopefully, mate. Hopefully. You've got to think that these guys, now they've cut their teeth on the likes of GTA, you know, GTA 3 and Vice City, that maybe they will turn their attention. Like, you look at guys like Espero as well, who did the Dead or Alive Ultimate mod for DOA 2. You've got Nysan as well, who did the Shenmue quiz game on Saturn. So these are people who have already dabbled in their own kind of projects. So, you know, who's to say what they'll go on and do? But I think the exciting thing is that, well, like you talked about there, mate, like, these games previously have been done by, like, a single developer or maybe a couple of people, right, or a small team. When you go on the DCA 3 website and you look at the size of the team, see the fact that there's so many of them, like, they're a bona fide, like, there's development teams that are probably making professional retail games that are smaller than this team.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's a who's who. And the fact that they've all come together, you know, and they're all putting their own little bits of expertise in, they all know, you know, little bits and bobs about different things, and it's just it's a beautiful melting pot of just knowledge, you know. And the excitement is that these guys are capable of going away and doing their own things, but then whenever they come together as a collective, like, I feel like they should have like an actual collective name. Like, you know what? the initiative Xbox died in its arse, man. This is a true initiative. Right? They are showing initiative in the Dreamcast scene. They need a collective name because they are, for all intents and purposes, a bona fide development team. Because, yeah, as I say, what they'll go on and do with their own kind of talents and their own projects, that's exciting. But whenever they come together, what could they do next? What original games could they make?
Yeah, it's very exciting indeed, mate. I think it probably is kind of pulled knowledge and experience over, you know, as we started saying, you know, the Dreamcast started off, the homebrew origins of it started, you know, when the Dreamcast was effectively, people could show that they could run CDRs on there, they could run homebrew on there. And then when you got from there, then, you know, people started loading it up with essentially indie stuff, homebrew stuff from there. Some of it commercial, some of it just pure homebrew. Which, like a lot of consoles, really, you know, I've got the soft modded Wii there, soft modded Xbox down there. You know, they all end up going down this route, don't they? But it feels like we're now at this point where we've gone through, and you've got people that have made great games, you know. You've got people that have made great games on Dreamcast, you know. Even though, as we said, we wish that some games pushed the Dreamcast a bit more graphically, it doesn't take away from the fact that they're fantastic pieces of software made by talented people that have effectively all probably done their bit to unlock the puzzle and the potential of the Sega Dreamcast. And you kind of trace that through, you know, the original homebrew stuff. Then you get into kind of recent years, and there was something of an explosion, wasn't there? Because you had the commercial side, you know, the Wave stuff that they were publishing. Then we had that explosion of Atomos Wave ports, didn't we? And that felt like a massive breakthrough, I think.
And that was that's terrible. The guy's name I had it in my head there, and this was straight out again, the guy for Dreamcast Talk that was behind that. But that was mental. Like, they somehow managed to reverse engineer these Atomos Wave games to run perfectly on a GDMU.
Yeah.
You know, it's absolutely crazy. Aye, and look, stuff like Dolphin Blue is brilliant. You know, yeah. It's like great. There's loads. I mean, some of the games are a bit kind of iffy. There's the kind of Daytona ripoff that's on there. The name escapes me, but it's...
Yeah, I can't remember. It's okay. I was looking through them earlier. And yeah, aye, I know the one you mean.
I mean, I've got them all on there. I downloaded the pack and I've got them all on there. Even have artwork for each of them, mate, on my open menu. You know what I mean? So
nice.
Can I not have them looking the part, you know? But no, they're good games, you know, and that's crazy. And, you know, you're thinking... Could they maybe find a way to get like Naomi 2 stuff? Like, you know, like could you do something? I mean, I don't know, strip bits out or tweak bits or something to, I don't know. Obviously Dreamcast would be lacking the VRAM and physical RAM to run them natively, but you kind of get to the stage now where you're starting to, you know, no pun intended, dream,
yeah,
about, you know, what could come. Because the speed that we've got to this stage is what's frightening. You know, like the Doom 64 port, that kind of, we watched that grow, you know, from build to build, excuse me, and, you know, like J.N. Martin, he was never fully satisfied with it. He was always pushing envelope, wanted to add the bump map and the dynamic lighting, 16 light sources on screen, stuff like that, you know, just continually pushing that envelope. You're thinking, right, okay. And then we had the Duke Nukem Atomic Edition as well. We had that. And then obviously you've had the stuff like the like Wipeout and also the Grand Theft Auto stuff. So you're seeing it ramping up. And the thing you were talking about, like GTA Vice City being like a kind of branch off of GTA 3, that's obviously what allowed it to kind of appear so quickly, because like they were working on GTA 3 and I remember people in the comments going, Vice City, when? And then like, boom, like all of a sudden there it was. And talking to Falco as well the other day, and that's what he was saying, like they've kind of backported most or a lot of the optimizations from GTA 3 into Vice City. But in terms of like where those projects are, Vice City in terms of optimizations is still way behind GTA 3. GTA 3's further down the road. And Vice City is a bigger game, pushes more polygons. It's a more intense game graphically, but Dreamcast version looks phenomenal. Like, my intention whenever they're finished is to basically do a three-way comparison between Dreamcast, Xbox, and PS2 and do Digital Foundry style swipe overs between different versions. Because I think the Dreamcast version will fool a lot of people, you know, whenever they are done. And there's still a little bit of kind of cynicism as well, I think, that, you know, it's as good as it's ever going to get. You look at what GTA 3 is like now compared to 3 months ago. Like, I was sending you kind of comparison photographs from that build and this one. Like, the lighting, the texture work, you know, it's just, it's night and day. It's gone from looking like a very basic PC accelerated, you know, like, remember when you first got like a 3D card for the PC and you turned on the 3D options and it was on like low settings.
Or on your Voodoo 2.
That's exactly what it looked like, a Voodoo 2 version. Like the characters, they looked like they were floating a bit, the shadows weren't quite there, textures were a bit kind of muddied and warped, and like the lighting looked a bit off, it looked almost too bright, like it was on like a set almost, like, and then now you look at it and it's dark and it's moody and it just looks like a dirty, grungy, crime riddled city ready to eat you up and spit you back out, mate. So the optimizations will come. As I say, and I spoke to Falco, he said about the frame limit, or sorry to kind of go back to that, but GTA 3 and Vice City, he said, are hard-coded to cap at 30. They don't like going above 30. So, but they've added the frame limit, or you can turn it off, and it'll try and go above it, and it'll try and go to 60, but it fucks up the physics. So, like, you can see cars flying up there and just not coming back. Like, you'll just see some absolutely crazy stuff going on with the physics, so it's not recommended to turn it off. And it can also add some kind of really well fluctuations, which doesn't make the performance look as worse than it really is. So, aye.
Sorry about that frame pacing, mate. But
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about that is, yeah, it's funny that they both come out in beta. When, obviously, Grand Theft Auto 3 is, obviously, as you say, a lot further along. Because, ultimately, Vice City benefits from a lot of the engine improvements that we've had for Grand Theft Auto 3 on Dreamcast. Because the thing that struck me about the Dreamcast version of GTA 3 originally is I didn't think it looked bad. I thought it looked great for what it was at the time. I think it probably suffered by comparison to the PS2 version in the same way that the Xbox version does, you know, because the PS2... And that's what I found fascinating about these beta versions, because the PS2 is a very strange machine. It's incredibly strange. You know, I think it's got something like a 1 gigabyte bus in terms of the way that it can pump, you know, data to and from the emotion engine to the graphic synthesizer and all that sort of stuff is insane. Even though those individual components aren't as powerful as, say, the GameCube or the Xbox, it could do unique, strange things that a few others could. You know, some of the effects that you get in Grand Theft Auto 3, you know, is one of them. The Xbox port never really, if you watch some of the Digital Foundry videos, it didn't really come close to doing what the PS2 version did. And I think it's the same to a degree on the PC. But it seems like, you know, the team have actually got the Dreamcast version looking like the PS2 version, which is an absolutely phenomenal achievement, really. And then you've got Vice City, which already is looking the part. But I think Vice City, it's a performance, I think, that kind of drags it down a little bit for now. And I think that's probably because they're still using a lot of the PC assets and it hasn't been optimized in terms of reduced geometry, you know, less complex. I mean, obviously, when you're taking the PC assets, they are effectively the Xbox assets, which were given extra complexity and detail over and above the PlayStation 2 version. So I think that's still to come, isn't it?
Aye. The PC assets, I think the original plan was to swap them out for PS2 ones.
Yeah.
You know, the textures. You know, I think that was the plan, was to basically compress and strip down the size of the kind of the character models, especially, you know, and the cars and stuff like that. And I think Frogbill had done some updates on his X page as well, like kind of before and after of like kind of car models, and saying that they'd saved X amount of performance here by using that model versus that one. So see, the fact that I've said it before, like I'm in the Simulant Discord where all these developers all have their talks, mate. It's like reading the fucking Matrix. Like, honestly, I read it and I don't understand it, but I'm impressed by it. It's like they're hitting it with things that I'm like, pfft, like, how do you even know to look at that? Like, it was the same whenever I uploaded the video for the first Wipeout build, right? And in the script for that, I said that I felt the air brakes weren't quite strong enough, and that it was probably down to the fact that the Dreamcast can, shoulder buttons or, you know, triggers were analog, and maybe it was looking for a digital input, you know, similar to the PS1's L and R buttons. And I put that video, I uploaded it at like 20 minutes to 4, right? 4:30 in the Discord, GN Martin put a screenshot of the code up going, found the fucking air brakes. It's like, so he'd literally went in and found that stuff, and I actually said that to him on the Discord as well. It was like, he's in and found that, and he amended it. He enabled analog controls. The stick wasn't working at first, it was only D-pad. So they're constantly adding this stuff, you know, these optimizations. But the GTA games, and I think that's where Vice City will benefit, is when they strip back the PC assets to probably using the PS2 ones. You know, not quite as sharp, or maybe not quite as detailed, but they do the job. You know, you would need to be really. I think if you take the PS2's textures and character models, and you output them at the Dreamcast native resolution, and you add that times two, like as Falco says, fuck the PS2, and his picture and his Discord avatar, you know. It's like, no Jaggies here. You know, we put times two AA on, and that's us. But aye, it's crazy that they're able just to kind of take the code of that version, the code of that version, get them working together to make this perfect kind of blend. Like the fog effects in GTA 3, man, they are beautiful. That said, the mission I did, which was the Chunky Lee Chong assassination, yeah. Mate, oh, I need to send you it and even upload it as an outtake. It's comedy, right? It needs Benny Hill music. You know how, like, you know he's got a car parked at each end, yeah. Right? He's got a blue and a red one, right? So what I try to do is I try and park a car in front of each one and then walk in and get them, right? Yeah. But I didn't park it in front of the blue one. I think it was the blue one. Whatever. Right, so I've ran in. And his wee gang have all ran up to me because I've pulled my gun out. I've locked on him and I'm chasing him and I'm shooting. And he's, guy's no dying, man. So he gets his car. I've parked my car just like no far from it. Jumps in and I'm chasing him. So rams him a couple of times. And you know how as you come out over the kind of main road, there's a little kind of concrete kind of road dividers?
Yeah.
Right? With grass in the top of it is. And there's three of them. Mate, he just kept driving around in a circle, right? but it took me about two or three times of chasing him in a circle to realise he was gone in a circle. So I eventually just sat there and started laughing. He's like, how's this guy expecting to get away from me? He's... I'm like, come on, man. So I don't know if that was a glitch, like if that's in the actual game proper. I'm like, mate, just drive straight up the hill. Why are you going round in a circle? So suffice to say, when I captured that gameplay, I'm like, nah, I can't use that. That was, like, eventually I rammed him off the road and his car blew up and I passed the mission, but it was like the worst mission successful you've ever seen in your life in a Grand Theft Auto game. It was so bad, but it was funny, mate. Gave me a good laugh anyway.
I don't know, mate. I've had some absolute shockers when I've been playing those games in the past. I've never beaten for GTA 3. I keep saying to myself, like, now that it's on Dreamcast, I'm going to beat it on Dreamcast. But, you know, the rate of progress is so fast. I'm just like, oh, which version am I going to... When will I start? When will I say, right, that's the version. I'm locked in. Because people have already beaten both games, haven't they, part of the testing. People have beaten Vice City, Falco said, a number of times. So I think we know that those are... With that one, you know, the games are... They're complete to the effect that, you know, you can play them, they're content complete, but obviously they need the optimizations. Doom 64, meanwhile, because was that taken from a decompilation of the N64 game, or was that taken from the PC version?
I believe it was decompiled N64, but there's elements of the PC in there. Obviously, it uses the assets from the additional levels on the Steam version. And that was added to that, the kind of the last update. I'm not entirely sure to which degree or how much the what assets come from what. I'm sure I read on the Discord that it decompiled the N64 version, but, you know, I'm not sure whether the PC aspect of it came in with the Lost Levels, it was called, wasn't it?
I can't remember what it's called specifically, but I mean,
just have a video on it, you know what I mean? I should know.
I mean, the thing is, like, you're comparing, we're talking about two different kind of situations here. Obviously, we've got different levels of maturity of Grand Theft Auto 3 and Grand Theft Auto Vice City, but both games in beta, one version further along in optimization than the other, both you can play from beginning to end. Doom 64, meanwhile, kind of to me represents, you know, a finished game. Now, obviously, we're talking about a game that's been ported from the Nintendo 64 as opposed to PlayStation 2, but it's going up a generation rather than going from PS to the same generation. Albeit, when you look at the Sega Dreamcast library, there are an awful lot of N64 ports enhanced N64 games. And when you look at what Doom 64 is doing on the Dreamcast, it's absolutely phenomenal. It's incredible. And I think there's a strong argument that that may be the best way to play Doom 64, especially if you've got a mouse and a keyboard. Because just the bump mapping that he's implemented on there, the level of quality and the lighting in there, you know, the rate at which it moves, the sheer volume of options, and then you've got the wealth of content. You know, it's yes, for my money, it's the best version of that game. And I think that just shows what a kind of the end state of some of these projects can get to. I think that's the gold standard, I think. Would you agree?
Aye. I looked at the video. It's the Lost Levels. And then it added the fan mod as well, which was Knee Deep in the Dead. It added that, which was a kind of chapter one. It's called Chapter 1, Knee Deep in the Dead, and obviously it's got the dynamic lighting. The bump mapping on that, mate, is absolutely sensational. Like, I remember the first time I seen it, and I witnessed it at the same time a fireball was thrown at me, and I'm like, I'm just looking, I'm going, that ceiling, that the rocks in that on those walls, like, they look like you could touch them. It's like, it might sound really daft, right, but it's that good. And whenever you see it moving at the pace it moves at, like, mouse and keyboard, mate, I'd love to play it with mouse and keyboard, but I'm not buying a Dreamcast mouse and keyboard just to play that. I'm quite happy with analog stick. But I can imagine if you're like a proper Doom player, like, playing that version with a mouse and keyboard, it must be damn satisfying, you know. And as we say, like, Jen Martin, they just kept going and kept going and kept adding to it and putting more and more in. I think it took a bit longer than he would have liked it to. That was the thing he commented on about the Wipeout port as well, that he doesn't want this one to last a year like the last one. You know, what excites me is, what is he going to move on to next? You know, as we've said already, what's he going to tackle next?
You know, yeah, indeed, mate.
But you're right, Doom 64 on Dreamcast, people will be going, but it's on Xbox Series X. It's like, but no, it's not got all this extra content in it. It's not, you know, and anyone who hasn't played the Dreamcast version, like, to see those 16 dynamic light sources and the bump mapping and the 60 FPS, and it's like, again, people will go, why? Why not? Like, let's think about it. Whenever you think about FPS games on Dreamcast, yeah, we had Quake 3 Arena, which was okay, but frame rate wasn't, I think frame rate was only 30 FPS on it.
Yeah.
The levels were dramatically scaled back from the PC versions. They were rebuilt, they were restructured to make them fit. And even the Dreamcast specific levels that they built to try and compensate for that, they were okay. But you look at the levels, the design in Doom 64, they're devilishly good. Secrets everywhere and wee hidden doors. And I like the fact that you can turn on all the keys in God mode and all the weapons, and you can just go straight to the best guns and just kill everything. It's like, even something like the plasma rifle that you get, man, as a player, those big blue orbs, and you see the way that they light up the room as they fire out. Oh man, it's too good.
It's the beautiful thing about Doom 64 is that I think there was kind of this view that it was a sort of port, but not really a port. It's like a side story to Doom, and I think that that game itself, because of how Doom lore has evolved in recent years with God, is it 2016 Doom now? It's 2016 that last one, was it? So we've got the new one coming this year, Doom, the Dark Ages, which looks phenomenal.
The first Doom reboot was 2016.
I think so. 8 bloody years ago.
Jesus.
But yeah,
that's terrifying.
Yeah, that really fleshed out the lore and gave Doom 64 its own place in history. And obviously, yep. Doom has a kind of a mixed history on the official ports on Sega consoles. You've got the 32X version, which I quite like the 32X version, but obviously has a lot of shortcomings in terms of the retail release. Obviously, the Doom Resurrection project, absolutely amazing what they did with the 32X port, and when they've, you know, enhanced it with the MD Plus with the audio and everything. You know, oh my god, I really need to get something to play it on the Mega CD, because I'd love to do that. But then, you know, seeing that game, there's so much that kind of comes to fruition there, because you and I both remember when we're reading through those issues of official Sega Saturn magazines back in the day, and one of the things that Richard Ledbetter of Digital Foundry, who was the editor at the time, was saying was, you know, bump mapping and all these light sources, and we never really got to see it in any retail games. And the fact that J.M. Martins has implemented that in this version of Doom is just absolutely phenomenal. And I think that's part of what makes seeing us get to this point now where we are at this level of maturity with Dreamcast Homebrew is just so satisfying. It's because, you know, this is what we didn't see. You know, this is what the Trip Machine was truly capable of. This is why they're all so impressive. This is what we could have had. You know, it's like Jim Bowen, isn't it? Here's what you could have won.
There you go. Take your plastic bully and your £100. There you go. Up the road, lad. Let's take a look at what you could have won.
But yeah, it's almost vindicating to see stuff like bump mapping in Doom 64 used to such a degree. And see Grand Theft Auto 3. And when people were asking why, I think that's a big reason why, because this machine was capable of so much more.
Mate, you've just, my mind's going away thinking about the prize board now. And Bill's like, in one, you'll never have to worry about the walls again with that lovely, tasty bump mapping. In two, if you like lights, so we've got you covered. We've got 16 dynamic light sources. And Bully's special prize is Grand Theft Auto 3 running at 30 FPS at 640 by 480. There we go.
Oh,
there you go.
There we go, mate. But it does feel...
We did see bump mapping once in a retail game, apparently.
Which game was that?
It was a coin on Shenmue.
Oh, okay. It does feel like, I think, when we first, I think when we first moved to YouTube, maybe we were first having this discussion around, you know, Dreamcast potential. And at the time, I think we'd just come out of that really strong Sega Saturn homebrew period where we'd had the Unreal demo, which was,
yes,
oh my God, that was mind blowing to see that playing on a Sega Saturn at the time, again, with those big open environments, you know, the light sourcing and that advanced game playing on Sega Saturn. We had games like CubeCat and Cold Case coming through, just games that were visually impressive. And I think we were kind of saying at the time, you know, we're seeing the limits of the Sega Saturn really be pushed now. When are we going to see the Dreamcast limits get pushed? And I think that was kind of where a lot of those, that feeling that we're describing, you know, these are great games that are being developed by the indie scene, but at the same time, what you're saying, the Dreamcast is capable of so much more, but now we're finally seeing that. By the same token, it feels like Sega Saturn homebrew is still pushing on even further and further. I don't know, mate, does it feel like there is a kind of a little rivalry between those two areas, and maybe will they push each other to new heights?
Aye, it's like, I mean, the Mega Drive scene, you know, in Brazil, you know, with like Pyron and Master Linkway and you know, Mauro.
That scene is insane. There's like a website that's got its own Mega Drive release list because there's so many.
Aye. You know, Rio Gamer as well. You know, these guys are just pumping out quality stuff on the Mega Drive, but I think they kind of exist in their own little kind of, not bubble, so to speak, but they do their own kind of thing. But I think the Saturn and Dreamcast stuff, it's not so much a rivalry. I think it'll be like a friendly rivalry, but you see a wee bit of crossover. Like Derek does a bit in both. You know, You've got Nysan, who, you know, he's obviously part of the GTA 3 team, but he, as I said earlier, did the Shenmue quiz stuff as well on Saturn. So, I mean, what would be good is that if the skills, obviously it's different development tools, but any kind of experience that these guys are picking up as coders and developers can only be a good thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe it'll open their eyes to new ideas or possibilities, or a light bulb will go off whenever they've done that on the Dreamcast, they'll have a look at the Saturn and they might see something that a Saturn-only homebrew developer might not have. You know, they might spot something, or that's the exciting thing. It's just the fact that there's so many people that are, it feels as if like there's just so much knowledge out there just now, and they're all learning at the same time. So they're just all soaking this in like sponges, mate. It's just like, and you can see them evolving. Like that's the scary thing. Obviously, the recent kind of Saturn homebrew competitions underway as well. There's Jay Beretta's back with that Micro Machines V3 style game as well. I have to say, you know, Jay, I'm disappointed you never kept working on Cold Case, mate. I need more Cold Case. It's too good. I need more Cold Case in my life. Not the TV show, the game. But hopefully one day, I'd love to see that get finished. You know, that's one game I would love to see get finished. Like, it might be too much for Jay Beretta to do a full game on his own, but could a team assemble to make something like that? We've seen that there's new tools out there to make development on Saturn homebrew even easier. You know, so Could people come together to help him finish that off? You know, that's the thing. But I think at one point it felt like the Mega Drive scene was doing its own thing and was really strong, and the Saturn was just going strength to strength to strength and was really pushing that innovation in terms of homebrew. And suddenly it's like the Dreamcast communities went, you know, like the old hold my beer, you know. Yeah. Like. But it's amazing to see, because we knew that potential was in that box. We knew it could do these games. You know, that's the thing. Like, no machine is on the market for like 2.5 years globally and gets killed off and isn't pushed. I think there's people out there that have said, oh, Shenmue 2 was pushing Dreamcast to its absolute limits. And I'm like, I don't think so. It's like, you think about what PS1 did in year 5 compared to year 1. Even look at what the Saturn was doing in 98 compared to 95.
Look at the PS2, you know, it started off with stuff like the Bouncer, you know, and that.
The Bouncer.
And you even compare something like, play God of War on the PlayStation 2, and you think, that's it. That's it. Topped out there. And then you go to God of War 2, and it is miles beyond. You know, that God of War 1, that console struggles. God of War 2, it's so much better visually, and it plays a lot better. And you just think, you know, that's the sort of maturity that we didn't get with Shenmue 2. Shenmue 2, I think you could probably see in there that they probably rushed elements of it. They didn't get the time to fully optimize it. And if we got a Shenmue 3 on the Dreamcast, that would have been, again, another a graphical step up. So yeah, we never got to see that potential at the time. And hopefully, I think we're seeing it now. And as you say, there is a lot of crossover. We are so very fortunate as Sega fans to have so many talented and passionate people within the community that are putting the time and effort into to create this stuff, you know, on all platforms. And it's been amazing to see it on the Dreamcast. And yeah, just as you say, mate, it's got us dreaming. It's got us dreaming. And I think probably a good place to kind of lead in is what could be next. I thought from my perspective, I'd love to see Outrun 2 on the Dreamcast. And it all comes back to who was it? It was someone was sharing the other day that there was a Sumo Digital developer who said, and someone said, "Oh, could we get? We had Outrun 2006 on the PSP. Could we get it on the Dreamcast?" And they said, "Yeah, well, the PSP two got 32 megabytes of RAM. Sega Dreamcast has less than that, so it'd be a struggle." And I was thinking, well, where have we heard that before? Obviously, that was GTA 3. And I did get thinking, out of everything, you know, I think we'd like to see the dream would be seeing something like Virtua Fighter 4, Scud Race on the Sega Dreamcast, but they come with their own much bigger challenges because if I remember correctly, I think even though Naomi was basically a Dreamcast in the arcade, the fact that it had such a bigger RAM pool meant that games still effectively had to be ported. They weren't just kind of a lift and drop. Wasn't just, you
Aye.
know, drag the files over. There was all sorts of other optimizations in there. So, and obviously, Scud Race is different architecture, would require a completely rewrite, probably build up from scratch, unless someone actually got their hands on the demo. Virtua Fighter 4 would require, you know, a full backport, and it would be a full port in probably from the ground up again. Outrun 2, you got the PC version. If that could be
Yes.
decompiled, you know, nips and tucks, I'd love to see that one day. I'd love to see that.
See, now you said that I'm sitting here thinking PC version, and the PC version has already been hacked apart and modded.
Yeah.
There's umpteen mods for that to remove like kind of censorship on character designs and you know just various graphical tweaks. So that framework might already be in place. You know, that if the PC version has been hacked to pieces, could that be, you know, backported onto Dreamcast? Could they take, you know, again, could they take the PC code, you know, recompile it, rip it apart, rebuild it, you know, and maybe take elements of the PSP version or the PS2 version in terms of textures and maybe, I don't know, downscale assets and to get them to fit, to get them to run. Who knows, mate? It'd be amazing if they could do it.
Yeah, because obviously today there's untold amounts of ways that you could play Outrun 2. Obviously, all on old systems apart from PC because Sega just, I don't know, just neglecting the greatest arcade racing game of all time, arguably. But you know,
There's
seeing it where
we've got a Sega Rally game on Dreamcast, mate.
it... yeah, okay, but you know, Sega. Arguably, that's why I said arguably. Sega Rally and Outrun 2. It's close. Close for
I'll
me.
that we okay.
It's like that enemy of Matthew Delirious. Okay.
Don't need to talk about no Sega Rally.
Sega are happy to neglect Outrun 2 and Sega Rally, but it does feel like the Outrun 2 should have been come to Dreamcast. You know, even though it came to it was Chihiro, you've got to think that there was a spark way back in 2001, maybe, that someone wanted to resurrect Outrun 2, Outrun, bring it to modern hardware. And obviously, if the Dreamcast was still going, it would have come to Dreamcast, would have been on Naomi or Naomi 2, and it would have come home to Dreamcast. But yeah, that's my wish list, mate. I imagine from your perspective, it would be seeing Virtua Fighter 4 where it's meant to be.
I remember ages ago, I took the Japanese PS2 case and I put the orange. By the way, the Virtua Fighter 4 case in Japan is stunning. Like, it's like the PAL one is so cheesy in comparison, but the Japanese one is absolute fire. It's like, oh, but you know, I took the Japanese one and I put the orange corner, pardon me, the corner logo up. And oh man, it just looked so right. It was like it just worked. I'm like, oh. And I refuse to believe that, you know, Virtua Fighter 4, Outrun 2, Jet Set Radio Future, Gun Valkyrie, Panzer Dragoon Order, all these games, I refuse to believe that they were hastily made or ported over to Xbox and PS2. You know, obviously PS2 got VF4 and Xbox got the rest of them, but like, these all had to be potential Dreamcast games. Just, you look at the time frame, like, either they were really, really fast at getting these, you know, shipped and out the door and getting them coded and getting them ready, or else there was some element of them already starting to bring these into a home version. But yeah, people say that VF4 couldn't be done on Dreamcast, and I really disagree with that, like, wholeheartedly. Like, the PS2 has to make cutbacks to fit it, but the PS2 makes cutbacks because it's trying to port a game from hardware that has no relation to. Whereas Naomi 2, yeah, it's got the more RAM and more VRAM, but there's already a kind of familial link there. There's already, like, it's like you've got baby Naomi, then you've got Naomi, then Naomi 2. Like, baby Naomi's a Dreamcast. It's like the most basic version, but it's still a family of devices. So you would think there would be an ability to scale it down. Like Power Stone and Dead or Alive 2, they look nigh identical with the Naomi versions, but it's just very clever downscaling of it to fit it on the lesser RAM of the Dreamcast. I think if you take some of the stage elements, make them 2D, like the PS2 does, you know, you maybe simplify the textures, make the fighters maybe a wee bit smaller, I don't know, but I still think there's a way that Dreamcast could have done VF4, and I think VF4 on Dreamcast would have looked a damn sight better than it does on PS2. And again, don't get me wrong, PS2 version is a great looking game in places. Jackie's stage with the roof, as I mentioned on last week's PS2 show, or 2 weeks ago, you know, that rooftop stage with the helicopter with the spotlight looks amazing, but it really highlights the Jaggies. You know, when the lights hit you, it's like, oh my God, fucking cut my finger. It's like, no, but the Dreamcast version would have been smooth moves.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been, it would have felt at home on the Dreamcast, especially after we got teased with the Virtua Fighter 4 Passport and preview disc in Shenmue 2. But yeah, a real shame, mate. But yeah, I think we'll see where the homebrew, it does feel like the sky's the limit with these guys. They're so, so talented, so passionate. Much like, you know, the rest of the homebrew teams out there, the ones that, you know, that are working wonders on the Sega Saturn now with the homebrew challenges, you know, the deluge of constant Mega Drive stuff. And obviously, you know, people will see stuff that we put on the channel all the time. You know, in the last few weeks, we had the Mega Drive port of Final Fight. We had the Capcom versus SNK2. Obviously, that's a translation rather than kind of a bit ground up homebrew, but an absolutely fantastic, you know, and that's another one. That's one, even though it's not building kind of a game from the ground up, just the sheer effort to go into translating a game to that scale, you know, even back in the day, Capcom didn't bother translating essentially 7/8 of the text. You know, and Derek and all those translators have come in as a team and put in a shift there to do that. So there was that. There's the Vice City Grand Theft Auto 3 stuff. It's just, we are truly blessed to have these people creating such incredible pieces of software. You know, and mate, we, I mean, it can be said time and time again. We love playing our old Sega games, but the fact that these people are bringing new titles to these consoles, it just feels like Christmas keeps coming again and again.
And you know what, mate? I think we're really lucky that we started doing this at the time we did. You know, because, like, as I say, we're a COVID podcast. We started during lockdown, April 2020, started as just a podcast. And, to think what the scene was like then, you think of the mods and the homebrew stuff that we've seen, we're really, really privileged and lucky that we've just come into this at a time where we've managed to just, they talk about, the old surfing a wave kind of analogy. We came on just at the start, nice calm waters, but riding that wave up, mate, and we have just seen it getting wilder and wilder all the time. And just, you wonder, when's it going to peak? We're only at the beginning. That's the thing. We are literally just at the beginning. These guys are going to get better. They're going to learn more. They're going to unlock more potential. They're going to find more they can do. They're still always finding. You look at Falco's X page. Like, I love it. Never read his really excited tweets that he's found some other way to boost performance from something, to add some kind of effect or to get an extra couple of cycles out the SH4s. It's just, and to read that palpable excitement that he's got whenever that happens.
Yeah, I love it.
It's amazing. It's like, it's just so genuine and infectious. And as people who love that system, it's great to see. We're in a really unprecedented time just now when it comes to, homebrew and Sega systems. I think it's like, you look around the retro scene, no other systems have got these kind of talented people working on their old consoles. Like, PlayStation Retro, I think, is neglected purely because it's still a live platform. Like, I don't think there's any kind of passion to go back the way from people who have like PS5 or PS4. I think like a retro game might come up on like PS Plus or something. Oh, we'll try that for old time's sake. But there's no real, like, you've had the X Station mod, obviously, for running SD card games or running games off an SD card, but there's no burgeoning homebrew scene. There's no innovations there that you're seeing. You look at N64, look at GameCube, you look around, like, even at PS2, there's nothing. Like, the Sega scene is an absolute hotbed of just innovation. And I think a lot of it comes because they're all fans of the system. They're all fans of the systems. And some of them are a lot younger, but some of them are of the ages of us. And I think there's a little bit of that kind of old stubbornness from back in the day, that old kind of that fight that we had as, Saturn owners or Dreamcast owners, that we knew we weren't the most popular system and we knew that we weren't the one in the fight, but we backed them all the same and we enjoyed it. And I think there's a bit of fight in them to prove a point. I think that's what a lot of this is. What do you mean you can't do transparencies on the Saturn? I can show you what we can do on Saturn. What do you mean you can't run Grand Theft Auto 3 on a Dreamcast? I'll get it up and running. It's like they're enjoying proving, decades of naysayers wrong. And the exciting thing is, mate, is they're going to continue to do that and then some.
I know. You look at stuff like Callisto OS and then the recent, news around Sega Saturn tools and making development. It's like a lot of the Sega Saturn scene, those guys saying, a lot of the guys came into it saying, well, I wanted to, people said that creating games for the Sega Saturn was a challenge and I wanted to see what that was about. And you look at what these people have done and you're right, mate. It feels like we're at a level of maturity. And yet with the development of new tools, this could very much just be the tip of the iceberg. So, wow, just, incredible, exciting stuff, and thanks again to everyone that's involved in this stuff, because it's just a pleasure to enjoy it. Playing our favorite games and our favorite consoles is one thing, but discovering new stuff is extra magical. But mate, I think that'll do us for this one. But yeah, I'd love to hear what our viewers, what our listeners think. You know, what do you think of this this explosion in Dreamcast advancement in homebrew games? You know, what's your favorite homebrew project so far, and what games would you love? You know, what's your dream game to come to the Dreamcast in the homebrew scene? Let us know. You can get in contact via the Sega Guys Discord or via the Radio Sega Discord or in the comments below. If you want to be extra mega, you can become a member with a bunch of awesome perks from as little as 99p. And if you're an Akira All Access member, you get your name read out as a special thanks, just as James is doing right now.
Our Akira All Access members for this week's show are G-Man, Stiff Peaks, Mikowski, Craig Williamson, Sega Saturn, Shiro, Resident SD, P-Wall, Peter 007, Andy Mackey, Nick Tullock, Greg Matthews, David Owens, Tom Fum, Kaiju Leviathan. We have Nelson Serino, and we have a new member of the Panzer Dragoon Premium Club. We have Daniel, and he's got Kiryu-san as his avatar. So that's a good choice, my man. But thank you to all of our members and subscribers for your continued support. And just to echo what you said, mate, you know, a massive thank you. I don't know if any of the guys that we've spoken about will watch this episode, but, you know, Derek Pascarella, Falco Gurgis, Skimp, Espero, you know, all these guys, Nysan, the guys that are working tirelessly on, you know, if anybody's name I've missed out, I think it's a guy called Phenom as well that's in there. There's just so many. Thank you to all of you for what you do for the community, for what you're bringing us, and for your tireless work and continuing to push that envelope and learn more to give us even better experiences. So thank you.
Yes, thank you, guys. Thank you for giving us the pleasure of covering your amazing work. And viewers, listeners, thank you so much for staying with us, for tuning in, for watching, liking, subscribing, however you support us. It's truly appreciated. We're on our way to 12,000 subscribers, which is absolutely unbelievable. Stay tuned, because I think we're moving into series season 6 now, mate. So, well, it's insane that we've gone through 5 years of doing this. Long may it continue.
It's just crazy, isn't it, mate? Like 5 years, like that's us. We're in the month. Was it August? August 19th, I think. No, April 19th, I think it was. You know, and we started crazy, and then we had the old joke about, I mean, knock this in the head, mate, because we've just no got time for this. And we were away for 9 months, and then we came back and went, let's start a YouTube channel. It's crazy. We're kicking the ass off a 12K, you know. I just can't believe the way the channel's exploded, and it's all just into you guys supporting us and tuning in and getting involved in the comments and sharing it, and for the community embracing what we do. It seems to be what we do resonates with people, so long may that continue. But thank you very much, everyone.
Yes, thank you so much. So until next time, we will see you on the Sega side.
Sega!